Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal for Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah.
No. Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap?
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. Fake crowd noise? The Emirates never sounded so good. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
All right, it's Thursday's football show. Nathan with you until 10 o'clock in a very interesting hour ahead in the Europa League. Half-time in the two semi-finals and the two English sides are both trailing at the break. Manchester United had gone in front early on against Roma. Really well-worked goal that was put away by Bruno Fernandes. But Paul Pogba gave away a penalty kick on a quarter of an hour. It was harsh. He slid in for a challenge down by the byline. No connection, but as the cross came in, it hit his flailing hand and the penalty kick was given. Lorenzo Pellegrini stuck it away. And then Edin Dzeko put Roma in front. The former Manchester City striker scoring once again against United. A close range finish, typical from Dzeko, a couple of yards out, and he put them in front 10 minutes before half time. Roma, remarkably, have had three players go off injured in that first half, including their goalkeeper. So even though you're allowed five substitutes, they're not going to be able to make any more changes because they have to take place during three stoppages during the match. So Manchester United 2-1 down at home against Roma. Arsenal, even worse for them, 2-0 down against Villarreal at the break. Goals from Manuel Tugueros and Raul Albiol for Villarreal inside the opening half an hour. Arsenal have been a mess. Strange team selection as well from Mikel Arteta there. So they have it all to do. Important for both United and Arsenal. United want silverware. Arsenal, their only hope of getting into the Champions League next season is by winning the Europa League, but both trailing at half time. Vinnie Perth is watching those games for us, and he's going to check in a little bit later and give his thoughts. Another result of note is in Spain, in La Liga, and Barcelona beaten at home 2-1 by Granada. Barca went in front through Messi, but it turned around late on. Barcelona had a chance to go top of La Liga if they had won that game, but it means it's incredibly tight with five games remaining. Atletico Madrid top on 73, and then both Real and Barca on 71 points, with Sevilla on 70 points. In a couple of weeks' time, those four teams all play each other. 53106 is the text number if you want to get in touch. It's a huge weekend coming up in the Premier League as well. We may have champions by the end of the weekend if Manchester City beat Crystal Palace on Saturday, and if Liverpool beat Manchester United on Sunday. We'll have that game live and off the ball on Sunday. It's a 4:30 kickoff. We'll be to it straight after Leinster against La Rochelle. Brian Kerr and Stephen Doyle will talk you through that one. Now, I'm delighted to be joined on the line by Bolton Wanderers striker Owen Doyle. How are you keeping, Owen?
All good, thanks.
It's been another good season for you. 18 goals so far in League 2, going with the 25 that saw you finish as top scorer last season. It's been a remarkable career that you've had with all the various clubs you've been through the years, but even at this stage it looks like you're still enjoying your football.
Yeah, I'm having a blast, yeah. I think I've as many clubs as I've had goals this season at this stage already, but it's been an enjoyable career already, and I'm still enjoying it.
And a big weekend coming up, an opportunity for Bolton to get back up to League One, potentially. You've two games left, third in the league at the moment, Exeter at home. Depending on other results, you could get the job done.
If we win, we go up Saturday, yeah. So full focus on Saturday now. We're playing Exeter, and if they win, they go into the playoffs themselves. So both teams will be fighting hard for results. But now I'm very confident that we can get it done. It's been a bit of a crazy year, and it'll be some achievement for the club if we could do it this weekend.
Yeah. What sort of a club is Bolton at the moment? We still think back to Bolton and the highs of the Sam Allardyce era and getting to the knockout stages of the UEFA Cup. They're like so many teams that are down in League 1 and League 2, there was financial mismanagement, they fell down through the leagues, there was all sorts going on constantly behind the scenes that it's still a bit of a shock to the system when you look in the paper and you see Bolton are a League 2 side. Is it a club that has sort of found itself again?
Yeah, it's definitely a club that's on the mend. as you said, we all remember the JJ Cotches and the Nelkas and all, and now for the club, and then obviously the turmoil that the club went through the years after that, and this new owner's came in now, and she's done a great job, and it's there's a few mistakes early on the season. I think that kind of showed on the pitch in the sense of we were terrible. We were, I think, 19th in the league in February, and since then we turned it around, and it's really been a season that's been split in two halves, and the first half is awful and the second half has been exceptional. So it's to be, it's been one of them mad seasons, and the club are really are going about it in the right way. Everything's done right now, and it's gone on the up, and it's a pleasure to be a part of the start of hoping the success that the club will have over the next coming years.
What was the turning point then? What was it that changed that meant that was very much a season of two halves?
The January window. The club backed the gaffer heavily in the January window, and we brought in some great players. Obviously, the salary cap was still a thing at the time, so he was very shrewd in who he was signing and stuff, but they gave the full go-ahead to bring in who he wanted, and he managed to get them players over the line, and they've been very good. They came straight in and bedded in really quickly, and we just got started rolling really quickly and started picking the results up and climbed up the table. It's been a mad second half of the season, I suppose you could say. I think we've only lost two games and about 18, and it's been great.
When you ask players, say, who've gone from Championship to Premier League, what's the biggest difference? It's always the speed of the game, that everything's that slight little bit quicker as you step up through the levels. Like, you've been to League 2, to League 1, to Championship, you've played League of Ireland, you've played in Scotland. What is the standard in League 2 like right now?
The standard in League 2 this year isn't as strong as it was last year. I think last year was a very strong league, and then obviously the pandemic hit, and it's... things went a bit mad in obviously the whole world, the sporting world as well. And they brought in the salary cap, and I don't think clubs really knew how to go about it, where they were going to kind of have their, I suppose you could say, their top earners, what part of the pitch you want them in and such, because it was a low wage bill considering what some of the wage bills were getting thrown out over the previous years in the league. And this year definitely isn't as strong as it was last year. But I think going up next year, if please God we get over the line, you'll be going into a division in League One where you'll have Bolton Wanderers, possibly Sunderland, Sheffield Wednesday, Ipswiches, possibly Portsmouth, massive clubs. Like clubs that, as I said earlier on in the show there, that were, you'd think them as Premier League clubs, certainly high-end champ clubs. So next year, I'm sure it'll be a makings of a really, really strong year.
Yeah, and clubs, a lot of them with a remarkably dedicated fan base as well. There'll be games next season in League One where there'll be 25, 30, 40,000 people at some of these matches. How have Bolton held up pre-pandemic in terms of the support base? Because, you know, it is, what, 10, 15 years now since the heady days of the Sam Allardyce era and playing UEFA Cup football. Is there still that passion within the town for the club, or has everything that got on, do you feel, maybe diminished it slightly?
No, it's very strong. I think this season, I think we've actually sold something like 9,000 or 10,000 season tickets, and the fans haven't even been able to get in. I think I don't even think one fan asked for a refund either, which shows you the strength of the support. I think if you look at the iFollow numbers, so they show the games through the iFollow on the Saturdays for the fans, I think Bolton have the fifth highest across the whole of the EFL. So that's including the Championship and League One and also League Two. So you can see the support is there. There's rumours of fans turning up Saturday and the numbers of the crowds, and they're not supposed to be and stuff, but the numbers you hear are quite outstanding, really, and considering we're still going through this pandemic and stuff. So it's a very, very, the massive club, well supported, and we certainly feel it. Like, it's an awful shame, I feel, to be having the success that, please God, if we get over the line now Saturday and not have the fans in the stadium, because it would have been a really enjoyable experience, a career high, I'd imagine.
Yeah, it is one of many real shames when it comes to sport. A lot has been missed out on over the past year. Manchester United have equalised against Roma. Brilliant team goal again. This time Fernandez, the provider, Edinson Cavani with a clinical finish. 3 minutes gone in the second half, so it's United 2, Roma 2. So, your career then, maybe for people who haven't followed it, and you need to be following closely to go through all 11 clubs. A lot of people probably like me pick up the paper on a Monday morning and you're flicking through the divisions and you go, geez, Owen Doyle has scored again. And then you look down at the top scorers and you see Owen Doyle is there again in League 1 or League 2. That there's been a consistent level of goal scoring. So you played for 11 different clubs at senior level from your time starting out at Shamrock Rovers, Sligo Rovers, made the move to Hibernian. You went to Chesterfield, to Cardiff, then on to Preston, Portsmouth, Oldham, Bradford, Swindon, and now at Bolton. Where did you play your best football?
Oh, God, good question. I think Chesterfield was very enjoyable before the move to Cardiff. Under Cookie, obviously, there, that was a good period. Last year at Swindon as well, it was very, very good, very enjoyable. It's hard to pinpoint one, obviously, at Sligo as well, really. Had a good time there before I moved across to Hibs, and it was I couldn't pinpoint one season, but it'd be definitely out of them three, I'd imagine.
Yeah, a couple of memorable FAI Cups with Sligo during your time there. Like 21 goals for Chesterfield in League One is a hell of a tally. You know, when you went there on loan with Oldham in League One, you got 14 as well. In terms of the goal scoring at the different levels, when you look from Championship again down to League One, League Two, how much more difficult is it to score goals in League One than it is in League Two? Like next season, you're thinking, parts of my game I'm really going to have to change, that the pace of it's going to be a bit more difficult, you know, I'm not going to get quite the same amount of chances.
League two, you might score maybe 5-6 goals a season off mistakes, maybe,
right?
So you might be able to sniff a chance out off a defender's mistake, and you might kind of snitch a goal on them and run off. And but League One, I think the opportunity to be scoring goals at the same rate is definitely there because the league itself is more open. So, like, just to put that in perspective, like, both teams, mostly in League One, they always go for it. It's a good league in the sense of there's always there's not many Route One teams in the league. Everyone's trying to play and everyone's trying to play through the lines, attractive football. So teams are going for it all the time. And obviously when a team's going for it, they leave gaps. And that's what I found the difference between the two leagues over the years, and in the sense of League Two, you could be having a bad game, but an opportunity might pop up in the sense of a mistake, and you might be able to get on top of that and score the goal. Whereas in League One, the opportunities come, but you actually get more opportunities because the games are more open, and that's where I'd see the difference in the two. So I think I'd be able to go up there again and kind of hit the same numbers that I have this year and last year, just by the fact that there'd be more opportunities because the games would be more open.
When you look through all those various transfers, I think five of them ended up being on deadline day. How much of your career has been by accident? How much by design? How often have you had clubs come in and really chase you down? And I presume there's been other times then when a manager has changed and ownership has changed and new strikers arrived in, and for your own career, you've needed to push for a move.
Yeah, every different move has had its different circumstances behind it. I'll be honest, like, I know the journeyman and all that, the tag is there, and I have no problem with it either. Like, but like, if it was my choice, I would have played for one club my whole career, if that was possible. But any time they came up, it would have been for the reason I wanted to play football. So if it was, well, I suppose you could say, like, going from Chesterfield to Cardiff, where they bought you and you were taking the step up, that's something you kind of have to do. From Cardiff to Preston, I wasn't playing at Cardiff at the time, so I wanted to go and play, and that's basically it. If any ever move that's came about has been to play more games that I've been playing at the moment, and to try kind of secure that next contract, as well, as you could say, to make sure that I'm not just someone that's been sat in the stands or behind the scenes for the last 6 months or anything. I never wanted to waste a season.
That tag of being a journeyman, sometimes it's seen as being a negative thing, that you're obviously always on the move, but there's a longevity that's needed to be that type of character. And like, to play in the Championship, League One, League Two, like, you need an incredible amount of quality. There's very few players who get the opportunity to play at any of those levels, but to do it consistently for a decade nearly, as you've done now, like, there's a hell of a lot to be proud of there.
Yeah, I'm overly proud of my career. I've got absolutely everything out of it that I think I possibly could have. I've always worked hard and worked on my game and stuff and gave it everything I have. So it's been enjoyable. I've tell you, them deadline days aren't enjoyable to have five of them now as well. I think I'm going to pass the world record, but they're stressful all the time. But it's been great. It's not over yet, obviously, either, but it's been great, really enjoyable, and I am quite proud of it.
Talk about the deadline day experience. Maybe there's five very different experiences, but I remember we had Harry Arthur on the show last year talking about deadline day, leaving Bournemouth, and he was driving up to the Midlands where he thought a deal was done, and he was halfway up and he got a call and say, go to Cardiff, and he ends up at Cardiff and he's basically on the motorway in the car having to make a decision about where his future lies, where the next 9 months of football lies in a car. It's incredible how football, such a billion-dollar industry, so often lets these things go down to the wire. Was that your experience a lot, that on the day your future will be totally up in the air?
Yeah, I suppose the money move would have been from Chesterfield to Cardiff, and that was deadline day. Like, so waking up deadline on the morning, deadline day, no idea what's happening. Loads of interest. No one's actually, the club hadn't accepted an offer from anyone, so not knowing where you're going. And then obviously the figure came in from Cardiff and the club accepted it, and I'm halfway down and I got the call to say, listen, pull over there. I was going through Birmingham at the time, and they got to pull over there, West Brom will come in for you. So I pulled over into the side of the M42 or something, and so just sit tight, West Brom are in for you. But they've got Carlton Cole in the building, and if he fails the medical, you're next in line. This is what I was like, oh my God, West Brom were in the Prem at the time. I would have been going from League One to Prem. So I'm waiting, I'm half an hour's gone. I'm like, come on, what's going on here? I'm going to miss the actual deadline. I need to kind of sign somewhere. So I've made the call myself and said, listen, what's the story here? Have you heard anything? It's like, no, I haven't heard anything. I was like, let's not take the risk. Let's just carry on to Cardiff. So got down to Cardiff and got over the line. And I'll never forget being sat in the room, and the deadline, I'd say it was an hour before it was to come, and my agent got the call. And he never said it to me, but I know it was the call. He walked out of the room and came back in, and you could see in his eyes that it was off that had been on the phone. And I just signed for Cardiff. And delighted that I was there as well. Like, I didn't really think, oh no, what could have been? It was still a huge move and great, but that was one of the experiences over the years, yeah.
Was that when Solskjaer was manager?
No, he just got the sack. They just got relegated from the Prem into the Championship, and Russell Slade was the manager.
Right. So when you hear of Cardiff's interest, like, are you frantically online researching about the manager, looking at the players, thinking about how I'll fit into this, or is it simply a case of you get the call from your agent, it's a better league, it's better money, it's just a no-brainer, you don't even think about this? Or are you in the background pushing, saying, actually, like, West Brom would be a far better fit for me in my career right now? Like, does the player have any great input into what's happening in that scenario?
No, there was none of that. It's very hectic. You're at home at the time with Kirill, and we'd one kid at the time, and you're thinking to yourself, God, I'm upending this little family here as well. You've just kind of got a bit comfortable here in the home, and it is a very difficult time, in the sense of, obviously, it's great and stuff, you're going on to better things, but it's changed, and it's huge change, and it happens so quickly, like in a matter of hours. It's just like, you don't know where you're going to be, and next thing, bang, you're there. There's been a couple of deadlines where I've had choices over what clubs to go for and stuff, and most of them have been made in location where I didn't want to leave the base that we were in at the time, so I would have signed for the nearest club. No, I wouldn't have been going online or anything and checking the squads or the managers, man. It's just a matter to get down there and get the deal done.
Yeah, it's not exactly an ideal scenario for peak performance. This is all so frantic. Then you're probably having to rush back home, try and arrange to move the family down. You're in training the next morning. You probably have a match 48 hours later. You're the new signing. Everybody's expected to deliver straight away.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's a mad experience. You live in a hotel for the first week or two until you find the place, and the missus finally follows down with the lorry full of household stuff, I suppose, after you, and it's a bit mental, and as you say, like, especially when it's a January sign and you're expected to go in and just start performing straight away, which isn't always the case. So it's interesting, alright. But it's been a very enjoyable experience. All of them have been enjoyable experiences over the years.
Yeah. How quickly, when you get to a club and into a dressing room, do you realise if it's going to be a good fit, if it's going to be a good dressing room, that this is a club that, that is going somewhere, that has something in it? Like, have you become good, considering all the moves, all the dressing rooms you've been in, have been able to figure that out?
I think you always know about a car. You never know who you're going to be on the until you get onto the pitch on a Saturday regarding results and performance and if the team's going to click and that. But you know by the what the environment's going to be like, I suppose, in the first couple of days, by the type of personnel that are in the change room with you. I think I'd have a pretty good judge of character at this stage and kind of know which lads to kind of go towards, who I reckon I'll be mates with and stuff. But it's now over the years, I haven't been in too many bad ones now, if I'm being honest.
Yeah. You mentioned there the thought process about sometimes you just want to stay where you are, actually, and you want to find a club that's within, I don't know, an hour or so of maybe where you're living, and that it's easy to get there. I was reading at one stage, I think your commute was 3.5 hours a day, and you were doing that on a regular basis. Like, that's pretty tough going, and again, probably makes it difficult to be in tip-top physical condition.
Yeah, so that was last year, and it was at Swindon, and I was actually doing pretty well. But the manager at the time, Richie Wellens, had played from previous, and the way he got me down there was he gave me a 50-day itinerary, and he says to me, bring that home to Ciara and let her see it. This will work. And basically, he was giving me 3 days off a week. So we'd play Saturday, and he'd give me Sunday, Monday off, and then I'd get up first thing Tuesday and do the drive down, and then I'd stay over Tuesday and train Wednesday and get back up, and be back up on Wednesday for the end of the school run, so it wouldn't be too bad, and we'd have Thursday off, and then it'd be the same routine for the Friday morning training and stay over for the match Saturday. And for any away games, my car got driven there and stuff, so he made it very easy for me to make it work and to keep Ciara happy as well, because we had 3 kids here in Liverpool at the time, and a 3.5 hour drive to Swindon isn't easy. She came down for one game to watch me. Actually got called off last minute because of the wind, and when we were driving back up that day, she's like, never again, we can never do this drive again together.
Ciara sounds like she had the patience of a saint.
She's good, yeah, good as gold.
Yeah. So the move then came about this season to Bolton. Was that simply then because of the fact that it was closer to home?
Yeah, and the stature of the club, obviously, couldn't ignore that. Obviously, my timing was very good in the sense of how well I'd done last year, to be coming into in the middle of a pandemic, to be trying to sign for the club, I suppose, if they're going to be after the players that done well the previous season. So I was very fortunate in that sense. And obviously, the biggest club at the level was interested. So, and they're only down the road from me as well, with just everything clicked into place, really. And grateful that I got over the line, yeah.
You're 33 now, so you know you're still banging in the goals at a good level. You're obviously keeping yourself in good shape. Have you always been a good professional?
Yeah, I've always been good. Yeah, I've got better and better as I got older. Maybe in the early days in Sligo, I was a bit mad down there, but when I came over here and towards actually the end of me Sligo, I kind of would have got myself into top shape, and I've maintained that ever since, and everything down to me sleep and diet and stuff, I'll be on the ball with all that. Yeah.
Difficult, I'd imagine, last season then at Swindon when you're in and making those three and a half hour drives.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, when you make up the sleep in the day down there, which was handy. There's nothing I could do here now with the kids flying about. But it's when you get down there into the hotel, you can kind of get a kip in the day and make up for the sleep you might have lost the night before. And regarding the diet, I was able to kind of prep a little bit and bring some food with me and stuff. So it was, I always look after myself in that sense. I wouldn't let that kind of get in the way of kind of doing things right. Yeah. So it was doable, and it worked out. It was a bit of a shame that obviously the season got cut short the way it did. But that was a good time.
When you look back then, best manager you worked under?
I'd have to be Cookie.
Yeah?
Yeah, he signed me 3 times. I think he's probably been fond of me over the years as well. We've done well for each other, but it's just he's mad as a brush, obviously, but there's method to his madness, and he's like if you had him on the show here now, you wouldn't be able to get him off it, I wouldn't imagine. So he's that type of character, and he's brilliant. Like the way he sees everything, like he's one of them people where you think you're having a conversation with him, but he's actually listening to 3 other conversations going on at the same time around him. and he's able to pick up on everything, and his eye for the game and his tactical awareness and his man management, it all clicks. And I wouldn't be surprised if he was the manager for Ireland one day.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring up the tactical awareness and his eye for the game, because quite often when you have somebody like Paul Cook, who's just such a big personality, such an infectious personality, that almost ends up overshadowing that side of it, that actually when it comes to the real job of management and picking a team and getting them to perform to the best of their ability, he has that as well. It's not just the man management side.
I don't know, absolutely. Obviously, you look at him on the sideline and he's got his hat on sideways and he's spilling coffee all over his hands and stuff, and you're thinking, God, what's this? This fella can't know much about football, but honest to God, like when you see him day to day and how he sets you up to win, and like he rarely work on defending throughout the week. He just, this is how we're going to beat the opposition. This is how you're going to beat them, and he works on how you're going to beat the opposition all the time. And he's brilliant. The way he sets you up, and he just has that eye for winning games. Like you look at his career and himself and management, he's probably been a manager for 12 years consistently now, except for obviously this brief time out, which was his own choosing for leaving Wigan to do a good thing for the club, really. And I think the average manager only lasts about a year, 18 months in a job maybe before getting the bullet. He's consistently been a manager for over a decade, which is success in itself. And he slowly worked himself up throughout his career, and he's gotten to the championship, and obviously now he's with Ipswich in a huge club. So it's now he's a credit, like, and he'll just keep going, I'd imagine.
Yeah. What about players then, played with and against? Who are the ones that stand out?
Played with would probably be Aidan McGeady. When you see him in training, we're at Preston together, and you see him in training day to day, and his feet, just he does things you don't even see it happening, and it's happened. And it's he's really just a little magician, like, just the way he can control the ball and get boy players and stuff. He's a joy to play with. Like, against it's a difficult one to pinpoint. Like, I kind of just think of like performances like over the years, like at Hibs, maybe when you're like Wanyama was very good at the time at Celtic. He played, put in a big performance against us once, along with Scott Brown. And I remember Jelinek was at Rangers. He went to Everton.
Yeah,
playing up front for Rangers was very good. And it's difficult to know. And then obviously, like, you're coming up against tough centre halves. Like, I've had Shane Duffy butt the back of my head a couple of times, and you think a car's had to come in through you, and you think, I'll never get past this fella. And it's one player who I find it hard to kind of, you have to look at Joey Hendo as well. You see him play with him and against him in Ireland, and he was always a joy to watch as well. So it's a difficult one.
He's a joy to listen to now. He's just started doing co-commentary for all the Sligo Rovers games, and he's absolutely brilliant at it, turns out. The enthusiasm he had as a player comes across in the commentary box as well.
I know, it's brilliant. I listened to a clip of him there during the week, and just something on up. Yeah, it's brilliant, yeah.
The international side of things, it never happened, and there was probably a time in Ireland where if you weren't playing in the Premier League or certainly banging in a lot of goals in the Championship, you wouldn't have had a look in. But that has obviously changed dramatically over the last decade, particularly in the last 6-7 years since Robbie Keane retired. You have been scoring goals at a very good rate at a lot of levels over the last 6-7 years. Any part of you feel I should have got a chance at some stage?
No, you pushed on the age there at the start of the show, and you're not talking to a 26-year-old anymore. And when I was 26, it was Kevin Doyle, Shane Longs, Robbie Keane, Noel Hunt was playing the Premier League at the time. You'd all these lads that were doing far better than I was from a peak age, I suppose you could say. I know it's changed a little bit now over the last few years, where lads in the Champ and a little bit of League One are getting sniffs at call-ups. But I think it's just bypassed me in that sense of maybe if I was 4 or 5 years younger, I might get a sniff now.
Yeah, I think there's no doubt about that. Were there times over the last 5-6 years where, you know, scouts were at matches, where coaches were there, where you thought, actually, you know, I'm in with a chance, or was it always just that little bit too far away?
Well, I wouldn't know, to be honest. I wouldn't be one for looking out to see if he was coming to watch me or anything like that. So I don't suppose that'd be a question for the scouts. And the international setup was never something I looked at. I always felt it was a bit too far away from me, maybe. Because, as I said earlier on, it was the Kevin Doyle, Shane Longs and Keno's and all that were kind of ahead of me. So, yeah, listen, it is what it is. Like, maybe 5 years too late.
We got a lot of texts in. Brian in Kildare says, if Owen gets us promoted this weekend, I'll replace him as my favourite Irish footballer to play for Bolton. Sorry, Jason McAteer.
Tell him thanks very much.
No pressure. Texting as well, saying they remember you well from your time as Sligo Rovers, particularly scoring the winner against Shamrock Rovers in the 2011 FAI Cup quarter final.
Yeah, I remember the game well. Yeah, it was. I think I ran to the middle of the pitch, and John Dillon found me around the Valamanis and stuck it in, and was carnage down the showgrounds. I think we were drunk for a couple of days after that one as well. So it was. That was a great night for the. For Sligo, that place used to be brilliant for them games. They did pack it out, and obviously Rovers would come down with it with the big following as well, and they were good times.
Has there been opportunity to come home? Was it ever something you considered?
I'd be home tomorrow if I could. I'll keep scoring goals though, which is my downfall at the minute over here. So
I'm just too good.
No, I don't mean to come across like that, but now my dream would now be Shamrock Rovers if they'd have me. But the yeah, it's something I want to do. We want to move home as a family, and I'd love to get back and definitely dip into the league again, 100%.
Because we're going to have Vinnie Perth on in a few minutes, who was obviously the Dundalk manager, and you know, we're always wondering about levels and where Dundalk and Shamrock Rovers are. And if you're looking at scoring goals in League 2, like, do you look at... this is a difficult question and full of potential pitfalls. When you're looking at the standard of those best League of Ireland clubs... compared to what you've seen in League 1, League 2, whereabouts are they?
It's difficult to know. It's difficult to know. Obviously, I think that I've been watching a lot of the League of Ireland lately, especially the last 2 years maybe, and the standards definitely shot up. Everyone's trying to play and stuff, and they've been some really good games, and I think the Rovers Bowles game the other night was very good. I watched most of that as well, so it's definitely improved a lot. I think it's difficult to compare in the sense there's a lot more games over here in England, so I've got no doubt that if it was a once-off two-legged European tie or something mad, if that could happen, that they definitely challenge. But there's the 46 game season over here, and it's long and it's hard and it's tedious and 2 games a week constantly. Be interesting to see how the teams would do when it went in against like that. Because that's a different, it's a bit of a different animal, like, to be honest. Like, it was a shock to my system when I first came across it. Like, it's a tough one to take, but I've no doubt, like, if you look at the quality of the play, the standard of the players, and how they're going about it now, I've no doubt they'll definitely be able to hold their own in League 1, League 2, definitely.
Just before you came
especially Rovers and Dundalk, and a little bit of Pats have seen this year as well.
Yeah.
They'll definitely be able to hold their own, yeah.
So you're 33 now, bang him in next season in League One, maybe another season in England, and then a 35, 36 year old Owen Doyle is open for offers?
Yeah, well, I've 2 years left on my contract at Bolton, and I've never seen out a contract at a club. So yeah, I wouldn't write it off, but it'd be sooner than that.
Yeah.
But I don't know, but please God, yeah, my next move in my eyes would be to League of Ireland and be Shamrock Rovers if they had me, yeah. That'd be the dream.
Yeah. By the sounds of it, you've enjoyed the journey. I was going to say, just before you came on, we were doing a piece on rugby with Robin Copeland, who's playing over in France in the second division. And while he's had his time with Munster and Connacht, he was making the point, you can make a very good career professionally in rugby away from the spotlight, away from the four provinces. And by the sounds of it, that's exactly what you have done. While there may not have been the opportunity for Ireland or in the Premier League, you've got a really good decade behind you of living that dream of being a professional footballer.
Oh, I've had a blast. I really have, yeah. I've loved every minute of it. There's a couple of relegations in there. I still love them. They were great experiences in the sense of feeling that heartache and how much it hurts for the fans of the clubs, and then to go on and then do the promotions as well. It's been so enjoyable. Like, I've loved every minute. I really have.
Well, Owen, it's been great to talk to you. You're not done yet. Hopefully you get the promotion sealed at the weekend, maybe get a goal as well, and maybe a party at some stage with the Bolton supporters over the summer, and we'll keep a very close eye on what you're doing up in League One next year.
Yeah, please God, thanks very much.
That is Owen Doyle there from Bolton Wanderers. All our football and off the ball is with thanks to Paddy Power. For information on responsible gambling, visit gamblecare.ie. Manchester United have turned it around against Roma. They lead by 4-2. 3 goals in the second half. 2 of them from Edinson Cavani. He also won a penalty in the last couple of moments, which has been tucked away by Bruno Fernandes. So they lead Roma 4-2. Quarter of an hour left. And Arsenal have got a crucial goal back. They were 2-0 down and down to 10 men after Dani Ceballos was sent off. But Nicolas Pepe has just scored a penalty. So Villarreal 2, Arsenal 1. We're going to go through them and all the rest of the day's football stories with Vinnie Perth next.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. Fake crowd noise. The Emirates never sounded so good. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
I tell you, it's all kicking off in the Europa League. It's hard to keep up with these semi-final first legs. Manchester United 5-2 up against Roma now, with 13 minutes remaining. Paul Pogba has just scored United's 5th goal, while it is Villarreal 2, Arsenal 1. Both sides now down to 10 men. Etienne Capoue has just been sent off for Villarreal. Vinnie Perth is with me. How are you keeping, Vinnie?
Yeah, all good. Keeping well.
So I've been half watching Manchester United Roma while talking to Owen Doyle there, and United were 2-1 down at half time. It was a bad penalty decision given against them. Pogba handball, probably shouldn't have had, you know, it was a bit stupid from him diving in for the challenge, and as the ball is passed, his arm is loose and dangling and it hits his hand. Bad defending for the second Roma goal, but it seems as though it's a totally different United in this second half.
Yeah, I suppose this game would sum up Manchester United for me. I don't know what to make of them. I heard an argument with Damien Delaney and Brian Kerr earlier on, and it was interesting because I think this Manchester United team are dividing opinion. For me, I think tonight sums it up, and the reason why I say that is Fernandes, Pogba and Cavani have been involved with every single goal they've scored. They've scored the goals, but even in the build-up play, it's been literally them supplying each other. For me, maybe it's a bold statement, but they're probably the only three world-class players they have. And people will question Pogba when you add him into that. But they have turned the game right back in their favour. This is an average enough Roma side. They've been poor, but defensively, United have been in trouble at different stages. It's been a fascinating game, and it's probably been typical of Manchester United's season this year. And the one thing I will say is, if you compare it to last night's game, there's no comparison in terms of quality. Last night's game with Paris Saint-Germain and Man City compared to this is... it's chalk and cheese. It's different.
It's like a different competition, Vinny.
Yeah, well, it's a different planet, to be fair.
Is, yeah, that's for sure.
And United are second best team on paper in the Premiership, way off where they need to be in terms of Champions League football. So interesting to watch it.
Should mention as well, Roma had 3 players go off injured in the first half as well, including their goalkeeper. And you're allowed to make 5 substitutions, but only at 3 times during the match. So that means they haven't been able to make changes during this second half. And they trail by 5-2 with 10 minutes remaining. United's team selection, I know they've got another game coming up against Liverpool on Sunday. A huge game, as always, in the Premier League that we'll have live here and off the ball. This time, for their front four, they went Rashford on the right, Pogba on the left, and Fernandes behind Cavani. I've rarely seen Rashford on the right work. Is it just that on the left-hand side it's far more natural to cut in from the left onto the right? Like, should it not be a straightforward enough switch for him?
No, because he suits coming in on his right foot and cutting in. I think he struggled a lot this second half of the season as a result of it. I think the manager is back Pogba, to be fair. Pogba plays in that left channel and he comes in off it. And as a result, I think Rashford is struggling. He's struggling for form. His goals last season compared to this season are off the charts in terms of what he got last year. He's way behind that. So he's really struggling. He doesn't look happy in himself. He doesn't look comfortable out there. He hasn't played well in a lot of the big games. And I think going forward for Manchester United, it's a worry because they haven't fixed that sort of right-hand side channel. If they're going to stick with Paul Pogba long-term, for me, I think he's getting there. He's been excellent tonight, as I said. When he's on form, he's as good as there is. So it's a big worry, I would imagine, for Manchester United, because probably you could argue Greenwood is better in that right-hand side position than Rashford. So do you have a challenge there?
I don't know if you've been able to see any of the Arsenal game. They're trailing Villarreal 2-1. So Villarreal scored twice in the opening half an hour. This game is in Spain. So Manuel Trigueros and Raul Albiol. Then Arsenal went down to 10 men. Dani Ceballos was sent off. They got a goal back through a penalty from Nicola Pepe. And Eddie Nkepu was then sent off for Villarreal. So they're in the final 5 minutes. Villarreal 2, Arsenal 1. It's not really happening for Arsenal at all. It feels as though they're as far away as they've ever been. Since the decline started under Arsene Wenger from challenging for a title, like challenging for top four next season, again, feels like a giant leap right now. They need defenders, midfielders, attackers.
Yeah, I'd like to think, I'm trying to make the argument that Arsenal are further down the road than people would give them credit for, but there's going to have to be a little bit of pain along the way. I think Smith Rowe, Saka, Chambers is coming back into form. Tierney, you have a lot of young players there who have a chance. But you know, the modern day game now, people aren't willing to wait. They're impatient. They're not going to give Arteta the time, whether the board do or not. I don't know, but I think they have to. But it will certainly be a blow to them if they go out to Villarreal manager. That's for sure. But they put themselves back in the game. I think they're further down the road than people give them credit for. The problem with them is, and it comes with young players, is the form goes up and down and up and down, and at times they're not too bad, they're quite good. Can they hold on to Odegaard from Real Madrid? That would make a difference to them. But they're just inconsistent. That comes with young players, and I think a bit like Manchester United when Solskjaer first went in, it's going to take time to rebuild the club and get it back to a consistent level of performances, and people are going to have to be patient with Arsenal, because history tells you, just keep replacing your manager, you're not going to get anywhere.
Has he settled on a tactical system yet?
I think he's settled on a system. As I said, the Odegaard coming in into that number 10 position, he generally plays in their best team, and he comes from deep into midfield, and they like runners off him. I think they've gone with Smith Rowe, it looks like, up front tonight. So he's had challenges with Bangyan, and you know, he hasn't been at it this year for them. They've had some challenges this season. It's just a development team. I'm not making excuses for them. Results aren't good enough. But as I said to you, you have to back managers sometimes. And they're not the Arsenal of old, and they're not going to be competing for Champions League for the next 2 or 3 years. But these things can flip so quickly, and I suppose if you're looking for an example of it, maybe Manchester United and the way they stuck with Solskjaer through some difficult periods is an example.
You mentioned last night's game, and geez, there's a lot in it. I'd imagine from a coaching point of view, you could watch it back 3 or 4 times and learn a hell of a lot, because at halftime you're looking at Paris Saint-Germain and thinking, like, this has been a masterclass from Mauricio Pochettino. They had put João Cancelo in a position where he was having not a huge amount of influence. He was being booked. You were wondering how long Pep could stick with him. They were getting Neymar, Di Maria in particular, on the ball consistently, even though Mbappe wasn't quite at it. It looked as though they should have been 2 or 3 nil up. And City, at that stage, I was wondering, was it almost too easy for them in the Premier League, that they had sort of got a false sense of security as to how good they were, and then when they came up against a really well-organised team, they couldn't figure it out, and they emerge at half-time and put in maybe a performance that is going to be the best 45 minutes we've seen in the Champions League all season. What did Guardiola do at half-time that flipped it?
Well, so one thing you said there, you were wondering, you know, did he have it too easy? I think that's the problem with modern-day football. You're talking about a game at the highest, highest level. And listen, we all have opinions and debate the game. But it was just 45 minutes where, to be fair to Pochettino, caused the Mules problems. And City caused some of their own problems. So, for example, Phil Foden was going in and closing down Martinez on the press. If you heard, he spoke about our press wasn't right in the first half. So it was Phil Foden going in after the centre-half, which meant Florenzi was getting out too easy, and that meant then Di Maria was pinning back Cancelo. So that was the problems in the first half. And then as a result of that, Neymar was playing in that sort of false number 10 position. He was meant to be playing left wing, and Verratti would even him low cover to him. Do that. So practically brilliant for Pochettino. And that's what happens at the highest level of the game. Again, Manchester United just scored another goal.
Yeah, Mason Greenwood's come on. A brilliant ball from Cavani outside of his right boot out to the right-hand side. Greenwood beat the offside trap and he smashed it in. So Manchester United are heading to the Europa League final, I think it's fair to say. They are 6-2 up, 5 goals. Brilliant second half performance from Manchester United. Sorry, Vinny, go on there.
Yeah, so a fascinating game last night. So that's what Pochettino won the battle in the first half. But the second half, there was people calling for maybe he needs to put on a centre forward, Pep and all that stuff. But no, what he done was he got De Bruyne to go and close centre half down. And he got Phil Foden to go in after Florenzi. They sorted out the press, start winning the ball back, and they got control of the ball. And I heard Barry Armstrong come saying, it's just possession for possession's sake. And I didn't agree with it at the time. I felt that was their way of winning ball back and developing and getting on top of Paris Saint-Germain. And then from them, that allowed Cancelo to play up the pitch. And Phil Foden and De Bruyne became then this award to number nines. And they played in the little pockets, and all of a sudden then there was a huge amount of passes for Gundogan, for Silva, for Jones to make into those two. And they really, really hurt the possession stats in the second half for all Man City. So Pep tactically won the second half battle. But what I will say is they didn't create lots of chances, City. Yeah. And the two goals were technically mistakes. This game is still alive. It's fascinating. Really looking forward to the second game. For 60 minutes, I'll tell you, Neymar was excellent. Mbappe, really, really good in terms of a threat. And Di Maria, this is a fascinating second leg. I cannot wait for it. Nearer than me, I studied that game today and done a little bit of homework on it, and it was tactically fascinating. But like these really, really top games, one in little moment, and you couldn't.
Your line is breaking up there, Vinny, unfortunately. I think we're pretty much out of time anyways, unfortunately, but we'll come back to this again. I fear that one of these days we're going to text you and you're going to be, sorry, I've got a gig somewhere, so, you know, I won't be answering your calls anymore. Is there any movement? There's obviously a lot of jobs out there at the moment, Vinny.
Yeah, loads of jobs. I've interviewed for Dunstar, Superquin, all over the place.
Here, are you going back to Dundalk or not?
No, I'm loads of decisions to make, but I'm looking at loads of different options. In and out of football, it's time. I've done a yard, I've built a shed, I've done all that stuff. It's time to crack on. So you're doing something for the next couple of weeks.
You'll be glad that the Skype has let you down there. So, Vinny, great stuff as always. We'll talk to you again soon. Vinny Perth there, looking back at last night and tonight. Manchester United 6-2 up. Arsenal still trailing by 2-1.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fake crowd noise. The Emirates never sounded so good. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.